Two Chocolate Cakes is a story of two cakes, bookended at the beginning of one life and at the end of another, and all the culinary and emotional layers in between those moments. Day after Thanksgiving pie. The Thanksgiving meal was a holiday of lukewarm feelings in my childhood home. The days before were spent baking pies, pumpkin, pecan, and chocolate cream, and ironing the one linen tablecloth my family owned. I usually polished the silver first, silver that my mother purchased at a yard sale, not silver handed down from a relative, and then wiped down the fine bone china, bought with S&H green stamps, from the A&P that my mother kept well out of our reach during the year. My Grammy and Grandpa would arrive on Thanksgiving afternoon, early, with either a dish of vile creamed onions or of revered sour cream coffee cake. But it was usually the creamed onions. Thanksgiving itself was a meal and a set of chores I could usually do without. My grandmother criticized my mother. My mother criticized my sister, and my father and grandfather just got drunk and told jokes heard in a barroom. I stayed out of the way, on the fringes of conversations, not quite involved, trying not to be seen. The good part of the holiday was before dinner, after dinner, and the day after dinner. Before dinner, after all the potatoes were peeled, and the turkey was crackling and hissing in its own juices in the oven, and right before, around the time my grandparents were due to arrive, my father and I would head out on our annual walk. We were looking for wild turkey, but it was never quite known what we would do if we found one, because the most deadly weapon my father ever carried with him was matches for his Marlboro Reds. We would hear them in the late summer and early fall, chortling and gaggling far off in the woods, but we didn't see them very often. My father and I would walk the woods for 2, sometimes 3 miles. The old logging path from the days when the woods behind my parents' house were farmed went up one side of Mount Archer and down the other. I picked up nuts and pine cones and other woody things while we walked, my father leaving a trail of cigarette ash, but never the butts. He tucked those in his pant cuffs, the ash like melting breadcrumbs on our trail. Sometimes it snowed, and we'd walk through the frosted leaves, and the dampness muffling the crunching sound like eggshells beneath our feet. We didn't speak, we just walked and pointed out birds to each other. At some point, usually when we'd reach the old foundation of the farm that was once there 200 years ago, we'd walk home. Walking past these old stone foundations crumbling into the hundreds of seasons of fallen leaves was creepy, like walking through a forgotten graveyard. That was our cue to return home for the big meal. The walk back always seemed shorter than the walk out. Our mid-afternoon dinner was a tedious affair. The no laughing at the dinner table rule was strictly enforced, even though my grandfather often tried to get us to giggle. My grandmother would give him a withering look, and he would then entertain himself with his fork through potatoes. Talking was restricted to what I was learning in school, how moist the turkey was, and the usual family gossip about my uncle's wives. The canned cranberry was passed around. I took some of that. The Brussels sprouts, turnip, and creamed onions. No thank you. After dinner, the women repaired to the small kitchen for dishwashing while the men rested their eyes. We ate Thanksgiving dinner early, so after the cleanup and the naps, my father was often ready to go out. He and I, sometimes Mom, but never my grandparents, would drive to the Rocks house for our second dessert, as they were usually just getting started on the final course. Their pies were the same as ours, the same canned cranberry, the same turnips, the same heavy drinkers, but the mood was lighter and cheerier. I'd eat more pie with the Rock kids, and we would fall into a sugar stupor in front of the TV. At some point, my father would bundle me up and drive us the 2 miles home. The day after Thanksgiving was usually a lazy one. These were the days before day after sales and promotions. My mother went back to work. Friday was her day at the church office, copying the church bulletin on the old mimeograph machine. My grandparents headed out to see their other two children. My sister would simply disappear, and Dad and I were left at home. Dad went for coffee early in the morning, holding court on his bar stool at the Limelight restaurant, and he would return after my mother left for the day. After lunch of leftover pie, we would run our traditional errands. First was a trip to the Christmas tree farm, where we would tag our tree after hiking through the acres of pines and firs. If the ground hadn't yet frozen, Dad would dig the tree up, wrap it carefully in burlap, being sure to take plenty of its native soil, and it would live in the backyard until Christmas Eve. After New Year's, we would put it back outside, and in the spring, he would ceremoniously plant it on the rocky ledge behind the house. Only one tree from my childhood ever lived more than a few years. After the tree farm, we would drive home, but we'd stop at the rocks first for some more leftover pie and a few beers. One year, I ate all the leftover jelly spearmint leaves and I was sick for 2 days. It was the worst. I do not eat those anymore, but I still like those jelly orange slices, though. Next was the orphan tree drive-by. The orphan Christmas tree was a tradition my grandfather had started years before. He had passed this scrawny pine tree every day on his rounds into town from Lake, and one day, a couple of weeks before Christmas, he put one single silver ball on one of its pathetic branches. The next day, he discovered someone had hung another ornament on it. This time, it was gold. By the time Christmas came, the tree was so heavily laden with Christmas ornaments and ribbons and notes and tinsel, the snow and frozen grasses trampled with a path that led from the road to the tree. Every year, he started putting ornaments on the tree until that last year at the lake, when a snowplow broke its spindly tree spine in half. My father and I did the same with a tree found on the side of the road on the way to the dump. We put one ornament on it the day after Thanksgiving, and by Christmas, the tree could barely stand under the weight of all the sparkly trinkets, tinsel, and tinfoil stars. Every Saturday, on our way to the dump, we chuckled knowingly and made innocent conversation with the rocks when we stopped there on our rounds. One year, though, Thanksgiving was different. It had been a hard year. Kay's accident, there had been a lot of yelling. I'd like to say I remember what happened, but I was at the rocks for a lot of it. At least I think I was. I'm sure someone was taking care of me. Anyway, my father and I went to the tree right after our quiet turkey dinner with just the four of us, no additional relatives, rather than the day after. In the dark, we felt our way around the short hillside, looking for the skinny tree with our flashlights, ducking behind the stone wall when cars came, forgetting, I guess, that Dad's orange truck was right on the side of the road. It started to snow when we found it, and we put our traditional tarnished silver ball on the highest branch. We tumbled down the hill and back into the truck, the snow caught in the headlights like metallic feathers glinting in a black sun. We didn't go to the rocks after. Instead, we went home, where my father packed a bag. In the morning, my mother drove him to a place where he stayed for a month. After he returned, we didn't go to the rocks for beer and pie anymore, but we still put a silver ball on the tree on the day after Thanksgiving. We did it together for 8 more years. I did it myself for 1 year after I turned 21, but it wasn't the same, and I never did it again after that. Pecan pie, best eaten after Thanksgiving. 1 cup brown sugar, packed. 1/2 cup granulated sugar. 1 tablespoon flour. 2 eggs. 2 tablespoons milk. 1 teaspoon vanilla. 1/2 cup butter, melted. 1 cup coarsely chopped pecans. Leave some whole for the top of the pie. Mix the sugars and the flour. Beat in the eggs, milk, melted butter, and vanilla. Add pecans. Pour into a ready-made pie shell. Carefully place whole pecans on top. Bake at 375 for 40 minutes. Serve with fresh whipped cream or vanilla ice cream. Makes a great after-Thanksgiving breakfast.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the recipes you've heard here, including author notes, photos, secret tips, and more, please visit twochocolatecakes.com. That's two, the word two, chocolatecakes.com.